Radio Times. A recent report by the American Academy of Arts and Sciences Commission on the Humanities and Social Sciences just issued a report about the value of humanities and social sciences in education. Here's a clip from a video made by George Lucas that's narrated by John Lithgow promoting the report that's titled The Heart of the Matter.
The stem of the flower is, in fact, STEM, science, technology, engineering, and math. But the blossom of the flower is the humanities. Without the blossom, the stem is completely useless. It's just a stem. How essential it is that these two areas work in coordination with each other.
Well, today in Radio Times, why we need a public that's as knowledgeable in literature, languages, history, sociology, psychology, and philosophy as it is in science, technology, engineering, and math. Joining us as we begin our conversation is Danielle S. Allen. She's the UPS Foundation Professor of Social Science at the Institute for Advanced Study in Princeton, New Jersey, and a commissioner on the American Academy of Arts and Sciences Heart of the Matter report. And Danielle Allen, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Great to be here. Thanks a lot for having me.
You're very welcome. What is the message of this report?
The message is that we need to replenish our capacity in the humanities and social sciences at the same time that we seek to replenish our capacity in the STEM fields, the science, technology, engineering, and math areas.
And do you think the humanities is sort of in the shadow of these STEM courses or these STEM classes?
Well, it's certainly the case that over the last 20 years, more of our public conversation in educational reform areas has focused on STEM than on the humanities. But the report really importantly calls for expanding our ambition, recognizing that we need to be excellent in both areas. So it's not an either-or question, it's a both-and question.
And when we talk about humanities, what are we talking about?
We're talking about literature, history, you know, that's on the humanities side, philosophy, art history, understanding imagery into music, and then also in the social sciences, things like political science, sociology, anthropology, all of the areas of study that help us understand how society works.
One of the arguments for STEM, science, technology, engineering, and math, is that these are skills that can lead to a job, a concrete job. Can the same be said of these humanities courses?
Absolutely. Vast array of jobs in our economy depend fundamentally on literacy, right? There's almost no job that really brings a good income that doesn't require significant verbal skills, writing, reading, communication. And at the end of the day, it's the humanities and social sciences that really build up those skills. And in fact, even excellence in sciences and engineering depends on really strong verbal capacities, as well as really strong capacity to work with images. Both of those kinds of expertise competency are cultivated first and foremost by the humanities and social sciences.
So what can we as a country do to promote the kind of humanities courses and education that you're talking about?
Well, one of the important messages in the commission report is that the new work on the Common Core State Standards, we think, has done a really good job of setting a high bar for what we're doing with language learning, literacy, communication skills. So we'd like to see people pay attention to those standards and think that they have potential to really help lift our capacity in this area.
And the idea is that all students essentially learn the same things?
Well, Common Core State Standards it's a bit more complicated than that. So, no, they haven't actually established a shared curriculum. There are only three texts that the Common Core State Standards recommend for everybody, and those texts are the Declaration of Independence, the Preamble and Bill of Rights of the Constitution, and Lincoln's second inaugural address. So that's it. And then what the Common Core State Standards really do is detail very precisely the kinds of skills that people need to have. So the verbal abilities, the understanding of syntax, the understanding of how to organize effective communication, and ditto on the mathematics side, the very concrete mathematical skills people need in order to achieve college readiness and work readiness. And then it's left up to particular school districts to determine what curriculum will actually achieve those standards. So it's an interesting combination of shared purpose, a shared extremely high aspiration, and very flexible, potentially totally diversified array of methods for achieving that shared aspiration.
And does that require a certain kind of teacher or teacher education and training?
Well, I think there's a lot of thought right now going into the question of how those standards would interact with teacher training. One of the things that the commission report also recommends is that we rethink the way in which we connect higher education to teacher preparation and teacher training. And we think that although there have, for a very long time now, been lots of programs that have university faculty providing developmental courses for K through 12 teachers, we believe that we should be able to build more effective partnerships and to bring greater alignment between the teaching professions at the K through 12 level and the university level. A program that we are interested in is the one that the government has developed or has proposed for STEM teachers, something called the STEM Master Teacher Corps. And so we are encouraging the creation of a Humanities Master Teacher Corps, which would think about how to incentivize and provide appropriate recognition to really stellar humanities teachers in order to enhance the profession, the standing of the profession generally.
We've done shows in the past on some medical schools that are teaching literature and teaching philosophy. The idea is that in order to be a good doctor, you need to have thought about some of the things that literature writes about. Do you agree with that?
Absolutely. I mean, I heard one person mention the fact that when the first thing a doctor has to do is take a patient's history, right, with lots of questions. So what does it mean exactly to take a history, and how do you know when you've really got a good understanding of the patient? Those are skills that one develops by reading histories, also by reading literature and novels that themselves do the job of presenting somebody's history. So across the board, these skills throughout all the ranges of the professions and workforce are honed by basic competencies in language, in storytelling, in observation. I've also seen classes at medical schools where doctors in training are taken as part of their training to museums, to art museums, mm-hmm. to spend time looking at pictures as a way of honing their ability to understand emotion as it's presented on people's faces. So, of course, we need these skills, not just in doctors,
sure.
but teachers, engineers, all kind of people.
The New York Times did a piece about this report that we've been talking about, the heart of the matter, and here's a quote from the article. A report this month by Harvard University, long a bastion of liberal arts, drew alarm with statistics showing that only 20% of its undergraduates in 2012 were majoring in the humanities, a drop from 36% in 1954. Does that concern you?
So one has to dig into those statistics to really understand them. There's a great article in today's Chronicle of Higher Education by Anthony Grafton and James Grossman, a professor at Princeton and head of the American Historical Association, that digs into those numbers, and I would encourage people to look at it. But a quick snapshot of that is one needs to understand that the picture of humanities majors is that they went through a huge boom in the 70s and then a huge falling off at the end of the 70s. So the level that we're actually at in the whole country is in fact higher now than it was in the 1950s. So in the 1950s, about 1 3/4 of the population, the college age population, had a humanities degree, whereas now about 2.5% of the college age population does. So we've always been talking about small numbers, and the interesting thing is that we're actually, you know, at a higher point than we were 50 years ago. Although it is the case that in the last sort of 10 years, we do see a gentle falling off again. So that is a cause for concern.
I wonder, too, about the, you know, so-called or the quote-unquote non-traditional learners. I mean, there, and I would include myself in this, there are students who don't do well in those STEM subjects, but do well in subjects that really tap into another part of their thinking processes.
Absolutely. I mean, I think there's a lot of work being done in a field called learning theory these days, which has gotten better at identifying different students' learning styles. And I think what we're learning from that is not just that some people are sort of better in one subject area than another, but that actually some of the strengths people have in one area can be used to help them do better in those other areas where they're weaker. So the people have different learning styles. some areas are better fits for some students than others, but then we can also use that relationship between the student and the subject matter to reinforce learning in other areas. So we want to make sure we have humanities offerings to catch the students for whom that's the right entrance into the whole project of learning.
There are, and we're going to be talking about this after our break here, the fact in Philadelphia, some pretty dramatic cuts in some arts programs. And it's often true that when school districts are having to tighten their belts, and many of them are having to do that, arts and culture classes are, or arts classes are often the first to go.
Well, you know, I thought one of the most interesting and exciting ideas that came out of the report was proposed by a visual artist and architect named Billy Chen. Mm. And, in fact, you should know her name because she was part of the team that just did the big...
Barns.
Exactly, yes, yes. The Barns.
So, she and her husband were on Radio Times. But, yes, please go ahead.
Terrific. Well, I mean, Billy is an incredibly creative person, and she's the inspiration behind the recommendation that we develop a culture core. Where she pointed out that we have an aging population and we have longer life expectancies, which means we have an incredibly rich resource in the population over 65 of people with deep understanding of arts and culture who might be tapped into to help expand the resources that we can provide in schools. Mm. So we do need to rebuild arts resources in schools, as Billy was saying over and over again during our conversations. And an interesting and exciting way to think about doing that would be through developing a culture core.
So what did you study when you went to college?
I was a classics major, so that means ancient history, ancient philosophy, ancient literature. For me, it was a perfect major because I didn't have to pick among philosophy, politics, literature, and so forth. I could do it all at the same time in about a particular time period.
And did anyone say to you, what does a classics major do for a living?
Absolutely. I got lots of that. Or my favorite actually was sitting on a plane and somebody asked me what I was studying and I said classics. And so he started asking me questions about vintage cars. So, you know, it was a terrific opportunity to say that I thought a classics major could take me to law, to journalism, into teaching, into any of the creative fields that really involve writing.
And I know that this report grew out of some requests from the U.S. Congress. And as we know, some reports are written, they get a little splash, and then they sit on a shelf somewhere. What's going to prevent that from happening?
Well, the American Academy really sees this as the beginning of a campaign for the humanities and social sciences. So there is work going on to develop a series of activities, further work to advance particular components of the recommendations.
So much more to do?
Absolutely. Years worth to do, I think.
Well, Danielle Allen, thank you so much for joining us today on Radio Times.
My pleasure. Thanks very much for having me.
You're welcome. Getting our conversation, talking about humanities education, and she's the UPS Foundation Professor of Social Science at the Institute for Advanced Study in Princeton, New Jersey, and a commissioner on the American Academy of Arts and Sciences Heart of the Matter report. And this is a report saying essentially, yes, STEM education, that's science, technology, engineering, and mathematics, is important, but so too are the humanities. We have two guests who are waiting in the wings, and we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. We'll be right back.
Supporting WHYY, Moore College of Art and Design offers evening art and design studios for adults at their convenient Center City campus. Programs include jewelry and digital photography and certificates to help with career advancement in print and web design, fashion studies, and interior design. Registration is still available for the continuing education summer session beginning Monday, July 15th. Further details at moore.edu or 215-965-4030.
This July 4th, the stars come out to celebrate America's biggest birthday party at Capitol 4th 2013. Join me, Corva Coleman, and onstage host Tom Bergeron to hear the legendary Barry Manilow, plus special guest Neil Diamond, the National Symphony Orchestra, and more. Live from the U.S. Capitol. Don't miss a Capitol 4th 2013 from NPR Music.
Thursday night at 8 on WHYY.
I I'm Jeremy Hobson, new co-host for Here and Now. Join Robin Young and me on WHYY at 1 p.m., a full 2 hours of all the news that breaks after Morning Edition and before All Things Considered. And, of course, the local news you've come to rely on each and every day. Here and Now on WHYY.
This is Radio Times. I'm Artie Moss-Cohen. The Philadelphia School District's budget crisis has led to layoffs, including pink slips for 66 teachers working in an itinerant music program that's been in existence for about 70 years. Joining us now is Marjorie Keefe, and she's a newly retired instrumental music teacher, part of this program, and she taught strings for 37 years, traveling to 7 schools in the Philadelphia School District. And nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thank you, Marty.
And also with us is Sean Buffington. He's the president of the University of the Arts, former associate provost for arts and culture at Harvard University. Sits on a number of boards here in Philadelphia. And Sean Buffington, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
Thanks, Marty.
You both were furiously taking notes as I was talking to our first guest here, and I'm just curious about your response to this report. How important do you think it is, Sean?
Well, I hope it's very important because I think the subject is tremendously important right now. I think there's been terrific conversation about the importance of STEM, and I couldn't agree more with that. But I think some real energy and focus around the issues of the arts and humanities and the social sciences is important.
And it's not an either or. It's a both and.
It has to be a both and.
Sort of, as we heard from that description, you know, the flower is the stem and there's the blossom.
Yes.
It's all sort of part of the same package in a way.
Yes, yeah, exactly. I mean, I'm not even sure I love that metaphor because I think they're actually more interconnected than that. I think you don't have one without the other in some ways.
How about for you, Marjorie? Again, you were fast and furiously taking notes there.
It's what we do as teachers, I think. I think it's an important report. I think it is certainly true that that the STEM subjects are important, but we don't want to neglect the other areas. I think that the alternative learning styles that were discussed are something that we really see in instrumental music. It tends to attract a lot of students who, it's a way to express things without words, which, since a lot of our students are economically disadvantaged, they're from different cultures, they often come to school without the same vocabulary and, you know, that more affluent students have. But nevertheless, they're on equal footing in this subject area because there are no words, so they they don't have to struggle with language or cultural issues.
Well, one of the reasons you're on this show is because of this itinerant program. And as I said in the introduction, you know, 66 people have been, I guess, gotten pink slips, including your husband. Now, you're newly retired from this program, but if it is not sort of reinvigorated or refunded, what's going to happen?
Well, I think a lot of people don't understand that when they say instrumental itinerant music teachers are being eliminated, that what that in fact means is that all instrumental music instruction is eliminated from every elementary school in the city, in the public schools, from every middle school except for, I believe, 2, and from all but a handful of high schools. So, in effect, they're removing this subject area from the curriculum. It has always been a sequential learning through elementary, middle, and high school. It is a curricular subject. The students receive grades. They receive humanities credits, which many colleges do look favorably upon for admissions and financial aid decisions. So the subject will, in effect, be gone because those few high schools cannot survive very long without students coming up. And another important point is that because we have such a high percentage of economically disadvantaged students in our city, unlike the suburbs, they cannot go out and afford to purchase instruments or afford the costly lessons. This was really a big equalizer, again, you know, for those students that they had these opportunities. And they were provided with school instruments on loan, free of charge. And given an instrument, given the instructions, they can achieve, they can excel, they can compete, and often win against those more affluent counterparts in the suburbs. So it's been highly successful, and it would really be sad to see it eliminated from the curriculum.
You're shaking your head, Sean.
Yeah, I was just going to observe, I run an arts university, and of course it's really important to us that students have the specific kinds of technical skills to thrive in a program like that. But back to the point that Professor Allen was making earlier, I think music instruction also provides a range of other kinds of educational opportunities for students. There's teamwork, there's close listening, there's collaboration with other artists and other thinkers. I mean, these are the kinds of skills that are going to enable you to thrive in college and to thrive and ultimately to get a job, frankly.
Well, I'm also wondering about the students who graduate from the University of the Arts, whether
sure.
you've had to sort of rejigger the curriculum, just because so much is, including technology, is changing out, you know, in the real world or the world of work.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. the technological revolution that we've lived through over the last, well, really it stretches back now probably 30 or 40 years, but it's really accelerated over the last 20, I would say, is completely transformed most of the fields that we offer instruction in. A field like graphic design, a traditional field that implies the use of the hand. The hand, while we still employ hand skills and we value hand skills, graphic design now is a field that almost is really sort of strategic communications design. It involves just a huge range of potential skills and opportunities for students.
And I would think just the way young people are oftentimes coming in, you know, already having made lots of
Absolutely.
Things already, made videos and put
Yes.
things on YouTube and all
Yes.
that.
Yes, yes. Oh, yeah. The students come in. What's interesting, of course, is that I think for students today, making things, if you will, making art, if you will, is commonplace. They're doing it all the time. They're doing it through Instagram. They're doing it through. They're doing it in a device that fits inside their pocket. What they don't necessarily have is a sense of context for that, a sense of the history of that, a sense of the potential for that, how you use those images and sounds to make meaning. Which is really the heart of the humanities, after all.
Well, indeed it is. And Margie, if I can go back to you, and even going back to this itinerant music program, it began, what, about 70 years ago, right?
As far as we know, between 70 and 80, it's hard to pinpoint, but it's been there for a very long time. And one thing that's always been unique about it, as well as the instruction that was provided by the itinerant music teachers, is we have an all-city orchestra band, jazz band and choir at the high school and also the middle school level. Many students, I've heard again and again, this is really a life-changing experience for them when they get a chance to participate in that. So without even leaving the city, they have access to this. This is also done in partnership very closely with the Philadelphia Orchestra. Helps assist with that. Our conductor for All City High School is Don Liuzzi, the principal timpanist from the Philadelphia Orchestra, and also a graduate of the itinerant instrumental program. He was a graduate of Franklin Learning Center and was a part of this program years ago. In fact, I believe there are seven Philadelphia Orchestra members right currently who are graduates of our program. If you go back further, there's many more. There's many many graduates of our program that are in symphony orchestras around the world, many jazz artists, huge amount of jazz artists, highly successful. Christian McBride, for example, you know, Grammy-winning jazz bassist. A lot of these people come back and help mentor the kids, provide workshops. Christian did that just last year. He's a wonderful person. You know, but that's just one example. There just really are many, many people throughout the field of music that have been a part of this program who wouldn't have had the opportunity if it were not offered to them in school. So
let me just quickly reintroduce the two of you. That's Marjorie Keefe, and for 37 years she was an itinerant teacher teaching string instruments in seven schools here in Philadelphia. She retired recently, but the program is its future is uncertain. 66 teachers have been laid off, including her husband, I should add. Also with us, Sean Buffington. He's the president of the University of the Arts. He sits on a number of boards here, including the Greater Philadelphia Cultural Alliance, the Kimmel Center for the Performing Arts, and several others as well. We're talking about the importance of arts and culture and humanities and taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Margie, I'm sure there are people listening to us who remember, maybe they weren't part of this program, but remember performing in a school play or performing in a school orchestra or a jazz band, and just how important that is to a child, especially a child who may not excel in some of these other subjects.
Yeah, it's certain themes reemerge over and over again. You hear students saying that it enables them, of course, to express themselves. It relieves stress. It enables them to... one student said, let go of words and pain. Mm. Pouring their heart out to God was another way they described it. It can become these bands and orchestras are like a safe space for the students because the students are incredibly supportive of each other. Playing music together really just creates a lot of empathy, and a lot of the students talk about bullying and you know, but just failure. You know, they're not necessarily succeeding in other subject areas, but they can succeed. Mm-hmm. You know, once they success creates more success. You know, it's incredibly important that you believe in your own ability to succeed. And for many students, instrumental music is the way that they have learned to do that. And then oftentimes it does carry over into other subject areas as they pursue it. And I am thinking of one recent example. There have been many over the years, but I have a student who, wonderful young man. He was from North Philly, not the greatest financial circumstances. You know, it was not something his family could have afforded to provide for him like most of our students. He started playing in elementary school, played through middle school, came to the High School for Creative and Performing Arts. The first year, his playing was way below the level of that school, but he began to seriously practice. By the second year, he was first bassist in the All-City, the district, Pennsylvania District, and Pennsylvania Region orchestras, which is an incredible accomplishment. He won a full scholarship to the Eastman School of Music. That's full tuition, room, board, all fees. He graduated from there. Actually, he was the first American student to win that prestigious scholarship at Eastman. He's graduated this year, and he has won another full scholarship to Rice University for graduate school, which is another top school for music. His goal is to win a seat in a symphony orchestra. Very difficult goal, but he's been winning auditions that he wasn't expected to win for the past 7 years.
That's quite a story.
And he, it's very impressive, but also he is the youngest of 5 siblings. He's the only one to graduate from high school, let alone college or now graduate school. And he was the only one involved in music. And this just wouldn't have been possible without that instrumental program there to give him the opportunity. So
yeah, powerful.
It's great story.
Powerful.
Very
story.
Important.
It is a great story and one that we should remember. And if I'm sort of toggling back and forth between the two of you, but to you, Sean, I mean, if you look at Philadelphia over the last, you know, 10, 20 years and you see the avenue of the arts, you see the theater scene, you see the right. restaurant scene, and you see that cultures is an economic benefit to this
Absolutely.
Region. I mean, the
yeah.
way sports may be better than some of the sports teams, considering how poorly they perform. But go ahead. Your thoughts about that.
No, I think that's absolutely right. I mean, there's been the Greater Philadelphia Cultural Alliance you mentioned I was on the board of does a report every year. Gary Stoyer's office in the Creative Economy office in the city has analyzed some of these numbers as well. And the economic impact of the creative economy in the city is enormous. Mm-hmm. And if I'm not mistaken, I don't want to get it wrong, but I think it is actually greater than the impact of the sports teams in terms of the dollar impact that's generated mm-hmm. by the total cultural activity in the city. So it's pretty significant, but it's not just the not-for-profit sector. Young creative people are also creating productive businesses that are not only not-for-profit, they're generating profits. Design companies, gaming companies, media-based companies, those are being launched in Philadelphia, men in droves, I would say almost. I mean, it's really remarkable.
Well, even underscoring what you're saying, and I think it's so obvious, is seeing that how technology and the arts really joining hands when you think about graphic design or filmmaking and film edit. All those things are really how those two disciplines work together.
Oh, yeah. And the students, I mean, I like to say that artists are in a sense, sort of native entrepreneurs, right? That's kind of what they do. They're confronted with an empty canvas or an empty screen, and they have to fill it. They're compelled to do so almost. And in a way, that kind of impulse is an entrepreneurial impulse. And I think we find that once they're given the context and the skills and the understanding, they're able to take that entrepreneurial spirit and they're able to apply it very broadly and to invent new fields, new possibilities, not just new works of art, but new organizations, new models, new economic activity.
Well, let me get some callers in at 1-888-477-9499, talking about the importance of the arts and humanities. And again, that phone number, 1-888-477-WHYY. We have Janet from Harleysville joining us on Radio Times. And Janet, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi.
Hi there.
My daughter is in the North Penn School District, which is in a suburb of Philadelphia, and I can't emphasize how much music has helped her educationally. She was struggling. She started young in kindergarten. She was five, and you know she started playing oboe in fourth grade. And the music instructors in the band have helped her and have encouraged her all the way through, and she has now gone from regular classes to honors classes. Music has completely changed the way her brain operates and her self-confidence and everything about, you know, who she thinks she is and as a person. I just can't emphasize enough how much I think music and the arts are a vital, vital part of education.
Well, Janet, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. Both of our guests, in fact, myself included, we're all nodding as you're describing your daughter. Let me give Marjorie Keefe a chance to weigh in on that, sort of underscoring the story that you just told us.
Yeah, it's we see that so often, that students do improve. I think there's a lot of research that by engaging the right half of the brain and both halves of the brain, it establishes neural pathways. It does, like you say, it sort of rewires the brain to work more efficiently in all areas of thinking. And so, and the effect increases the longer one continues with it. So you also see statistics like, I think students in high school bands and orchestras are the least likely to substance abuse of any subgroup in high schools, and I think that you see the effects in so many areas. I've had students who were really struggling academically and in danger of failing, and they learned to apply the hard work and the discipline and just the confidence or the belief in themselves and bring the grades up, because when they do it in music, another thing I feel like in music, when we perform, we have a really high standard of accuracy. I mean, if you 90% will get you an A in another subject. If you only play 90% of the notes right, that's pretty bad. So we're going for 99%, and some of the students really learn to apply that in the other subjects.
Janet, thanks for the call to Radio Times. You can call as well. That phone number is 1-888-477-9499. We're talking about something not particularly controversial, the importance of arts and culture. And again, our guests are Sean Buffington and Marjorie Keefe. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Holy Family University supports WHYY and is offering a graduate open house on Tuesday, July 9th, beginning at 5:30 p.m. at the university's Northeast Philadelphia campus. It's an opportunity to learn more about Holy Family's graduate programs in education, counseling, psychology, criminal justice, business, nursing, and accelerated MBAs designed specifically to help balance school with work and life. Accepting applications now for a fall start. Details at holyfamily.edu/achieve.
On the next Fresh Air, children's author Tommy Ungerer. Like his friend Maurice Sendak, Ungerer's work helped change children's books in the 1950s and 60s. But after he began drawing adult erotica, his books were banned from American libraries. Ungerer is the subject of a new documentary called
Far Out Is Not Far Enough.
And that's
one of my sayings.
Join us.
this afternoon at 3 and again tonight at 7 on WHYY.
The hunt for the American who leaked details about national security surveillance programs plays out as a story about secrets and lies. Secrets and lies can erode trust in any relationship, at home, at work, and certainly with the powers that be. On the next Voices in the Family with Dr. Dan Gottlieb, what's behind the secrets and lies we tell? When are they helpful? And when are they hurtful? Today at noon, here on WHYY-FM.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscowane. As we all know, there's been a growing emphasis on something called STEM, science, technology, engineering, and mathematics, because in many ways there are marketable skills associated with those majors. Well, the American Academy of Arts and Sciences has just issued a report called The Heart of the Matter, making an impassioned plea to support the humanities in education. As we know, these kinds of classes are often the first ones cut when school districts have to cut their budgets. We begin with one of the members of the Academy's commission, and joining us for the rest of the hour, Sean Buffington, president of the University of the Arts in Philadelphia, and Marjorie Keefe, who recently retired as a music teacher for the Philadelphia School District's itinerant music program that just announced major layoffs. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Sean, going back to the University of the Arts, and I would also think that it's important to have that if you study photography, that you also are going to be studying, you know, fine arts, that it's important to have
Sure.
a lot of cross-pollination when it comes to arts and humanities.
Absolutely. I think, you know, traditionally, also, I think art schools tended to be relatively narrow in terms of how their curricula were structured, and so there really was a sense. I mean, a lot of these schools, of course, grew out of, they were really professional training programs. Over time, though, I think there's been a real recognition about how these disciplines interconnect with one another, and frankly, we've been pushed by the students because they don't think of these things as being narrowly defined anymore, in part because of some of the technological changes you were talking about. They sort of wonder, well, gee, why do I only have to take photos? How come the photos can't somehow mesh with music? How come those things can't somehow mesh with, you know, scripted words? I mean, why are these things not part of the whole? I want to do all of these things. So they push us too, I think.
I would think too, you need philosophy and literature, because if you're going to make a photograph, you have to know something about
the
world.
What are you making art about? What are you making art about, right? It's not only about, it's not just about self-expression, of course. It's also about engaging with the world. It's about engaging with society. And technical tools, sort of visual tools or aural tools, whatever, are enormously important, but so too are intellectual tools. Mm-hmm. How do I understand the world around me and then translate that into some sort of visual or sonic intervention in that world?
We were talking during the break about people's majors, and Sean, what was your major when you studied in college?
Well, I was in Afro-American Studies and English and American Literature, and I studied the West Indian novel.
Wow. And did people say to you, what are you going to do with that?
Yes, I think that my father was one of those people, actually.
And how about for you, Marjorie?
Oh, well, I majored in cello music education with concentration in cello at Temple University long ago. I think there's always many pathways that are open. I think I've read statistics that music majors have the highest rate of acceptance to medical school of any of any major, surprisingly. Yeah, I think that study was done a few years back. But who would think, including biology majors? So, I mean, I think the arts teach problem-solving skills and just ways to look at things and ways to figure out a better way, maybe, to do something.
Well, and it seems, I mean, if we need problem-solving skills, wouldn't you say?
Yeah.
And not just as a country, but as a world.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
This is one of our favorite stories. We have a student who graduated with a sculpture degree who is now one of the drivers on the Mars rover.
I interviewed that guy.
Did you interview Frank?
Yes.
So you know that story.
Wow. Yes, it's an amazing story.
It's a great story, and I think Frank would say, well, you can tell me what Frank said, but I think Frank would say that his training as a sculptor is exactly what's enabled him to succeed in this radically different field. So these fields absolutely do provide us with the kind of background and education that we need to solve really interesting, complex problems.
That's exactly what he said. Let me get callers back in on the conversation. Looks like we have Alex from Wayne joining us on Radio Times. And Alex, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi
there.
I'm all in favor of anything from music, art, phys ed, but please don't forget about foreign language.
Foreign languages.
Yes, they seem to be being cut out of the budget almost as often as art and music.
Well, that's an interesting point. And Sean, maybe I can toss that back to you about if we're talking about humanities, broadly speaking, certainly learning a foreign language.
Absolutely. And the commission's report is very clear about that, that language acquisition is a really important part of language acquisition, and also the understanding of cultures not our own are going to be critical. Mm-hmm. If the United States is going to continue, if the United States and individuals in the United States are going to continue to interact productively with the rest of the world.
Well, I would wonder too, Margie, whether learning a foreign language and learning a score, whether there's some interesting parallels between those two endeavors.
I think there is, because I think learning to read music is learning another language. It's a language without words. But it is a language, and it's a universal language that English language learners, again, are not handicapped by it. I think there is a transfer there. I think that students, often when they learn to play one instrument, they can easily learn another instrument, and I think that they tend to do rather well in languages, which is important. And another thing I'd like to, I've been talking about all of the success stories of students who have majored in music, and we do have many of those. We have students in Juilliard, in Curtis, in every major, graduates of our program. But it's important to remember the effects on the average student and just the for the social skills and leadership skills. I'm thinking of a young lady who I began to teach in sixth grade. She was shy, quiet, withdrawn. She played the cello. She was really hardworking and determined to play everything accurately, but she played so softly, no one could hear her. Not a thing. I mean, even if you were right next to her. But we worked on that week after week because, it just is something that instrumental music lent itself to very well. She quickly became the leader of the cello section. She got into All City Middle School. By eighth grade, she was the president of her class. Wow. And she was making speeches in front of the whole school, and everybody heard them. and so this leadership skill that she has developed is going to be of great value to society. Instead of just being a quiet little person locked within herself, and you hear this again and again from students, I think, in the arts, that it brings them out of their shell, and they are able to develop all kinds of qualities that they possessed, maybe they didn't know they had.
Yeah, I do want to get back to our callers, but I'm also thinking, Sean, that part of an arts and culture education is also to create an audience, maybe not a member of the orchestra, but you want an audience who can listen or go to a gallery and enjoy what they, or maybe even understand what they see on the walls there.
Oh my gosh, absolutely. Yeah. We I'm not an artist, but I'll speak for artists for a moment. Artists absolutely need people to, and it's not just to sit passively and listen or look, it's to engage. That's what artists want. Yeah. They want questions, they want to be pushed, they want to be asked, why did you make this? What's this about? Why are you playing this? Why did you write this? We absolutely need that. And I think increasingly, because of some of the changes, unfortunately, we've seen in public schools, we are seeing a less well-able group of young people coming out into the world to interact with artists.
And sometimes we talk about these as, hard skills and soft skills, the idea that arts and culture, humanities, those are soft skills. I don't, I'm uncomfortable with that. It just doesn't seem to speak to what's really at stake here.
Gosh, I'll tell you. I mean, if those are soft skills, I have never seen a more talented, committed, hardworking, creative group of young people than the students at the University of the Arts, and the capacities that they have to ask questions, to create, to engage in complex conversations. I mean, it's pretty incredible.
Let me get to, it looks like David from Yardley to join our conversation. And David, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi, Marty.
Hi there.
Thanks for taking my call.
You're very welcome.
I wanted to, there's been a lot of great discussion about the arts. I want to put in a plug for the humanities as well. I went to Penn State and graduated in 1984, and I was in Navy ROTC, trained to be a Navy officer, and I found the only liberal arts major that Penn State had that gave me a Bachelor of Science, which was a requirement for the Navy. And it really gave me a fantastic, well-rounded education and understanding of philosophy, of history. I really think it taught me how to think. And interestingly, when I was commissioned, the Navy made me an engineer, a ship's engineer. But it was, I think, my ability to problem solve and think that helped me to be successful with that. And those skills have served me well throughout my career. I've since left the Navy. Now I'm a consultant in logistics and transportation. And it's a broad way of thinking that I don't think you learn as well in the more technical engineering and science fields. You're so focused on your individual area, you often don't have time to learn about that in the broader context.
Well, David, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. Very interesting comments. And Marjorie, do you want to weigh in on that or respond to what David just said?
I think that's absolutely true and something that is a weakness maybe in our educational system, because it does seem that people, well, you know, just you look at the standardized testing that is done, the PSSAs, and they're switching to a new one now, and there are so many things that aren't measured by those tests. You can't, ultimately the humanities and the arts are about connection and communicating with yourself, understanding yourself, understanding others, understanding the world around you, and how can you measure that on a test? But it's so important.
Well, I think his call is it really sort of underscores what the two of you have been saying about this sort of broader way of thinking.
Absolutely.
You know, beyond,
I mean, I think, yeah,
sort of
the humanities, arts, social sciences, I kind of put them together in a group, and I think of them as those disciplines. And actually, I think the science disciplines are in there, too. I think the issue is not so much what you're studying, it's what the study of that is able to do for you. And if it's taught in the right way, I think it does exactly what David is suggesting. It broadens you. It enables you to think critically, to solve problems, to articulate your thinking clearly. And I think a good science program can do that too.
David, thanks for the call. Let's see what Adam from Doylestown has to say. Adam, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi, Marty. Thanks for taking my call.
You're very welcome.
I'd like to make a comment about the power of particularly a performing arts program, not just to transform individuals, but to also transform entire communities. And when they're implemented well, how working in a group and succeeding as a group can really bring about a sense of pride in the school and connect students to each other and their faculty. And that has a greater positive effect than just on any one individual.
And Adam, are you...
Especially in an underprivileged area in the city.
And are you talking about yourself?
Say again?
Are you talking about yourself, Adam, an experience that you had?
Oh, yes, absolutely. Music completely changed my life and set me on a path that now I'm a music educator myself. But it had a huge impact on me personally. And I've seen it happen in communities where when there's a powerful music program or a powerful arts program, how it can have an overall terrific effect on the school community as a whole.
Well, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. A kindred spirit, Marjorie.
Yes, certainly, certainly we see that. It really does bring communities together. It's a wonderful thing. Music, art, drama. I think that there have been studies that most high performing schools include very robust programs in the performing arts, the visual arts, and the humanities. I think that is established through research. So it's important if we want our schools to achieve that we need these things in our schools.
Do you worry, Sean? I mean, you run a school for college students, but when you hear about the crisis, not just in Philadelphia, but really across the state of Pennsylvania, school districts having to tighten their belts, and as we've been talking about, oftentimes music programs, arts and culture programs get cut. Does that worry you as you think about the students coming in and the kind of world that they might inherit?
I think it's terribly worrisome. I really do. And of course, we have a particular stake in it because we're recruiting students into an arts program, and we need them to be able to do certain kinds of things to perform in our programs. But it worries me at a deeper level than that, because for me, the arts are not, and the humanities are not, they're not frills, they're not extras, they're not extracurriculars or hobbies. They really are central to, I would argue, central to what it means to be human, and educated people need that. They need exposure to that.
Let me squeeze one more caller in. Looks like we have Gerald from Bordentown, New Jersey. And Gerald, go ahead. You're on Radio Times. Almost out of time here, but go ahead.
Real quick, I appreciate what the guests have said, but I think the latter part is more important. You need to focus on the average student and involving him in the sciences and the humanities as well. I'm a former physics teacher, and I always found it much easier to convince a physics major to take a humanities course than I ever was able to take a student of the humanities and convince him to take a physics course.
Oh, that's fascinating.
So you have to start it early, and you have to look at that population that you see every day, not just the standouts, who are important. But you need something at the middle school and high school level to keep everybody involved.
Well, Gerald, I'm giving you the last word. Thanks for the call to Radio Times.
Thank you.
You're welcome. And we do have to end on that note. My thanks to both of you for joining us today on Radio Times. And Sean Buffington, president of the University of the Arts here in Philadelphia. Nice to have you with us on Radio Times. And Marjorie Keefe, thank you very much as well.
Thank you, Marty.
And good luck to this program as well. Newly retired instrumental music teacher, spent 37 years teaching in Philadelphia, part of an itinerant music program. And sadly, about 66 of those teachers have received pink slips. And we'll keep an eye on this program and see what happens as the summer progresses. Go to whyy.org/radiotimes and you can find out much more about this program. Nick Sessler, the intern for today's edition of Radio Times, Kevin Griffin, our engineer, the show produced by Susan Greenbaum, Patty McMahon, and Debbie Bilder with Emily Bryant today. I'm Marty Moscone. Thank you so much for joining us.